Welcome back to the Native Waters on Arid Lands podcast, where we're talking with different members of our project team about their work. I'm Kelsey Fitzgerald, and today I'm going to be talking with Dr. Derek Konecas, who's an associate professor with the Environmental Studies program at Ohio University's Voinovich School. Derek has a PhD in public policy and works as part of the Native Waters project team on climate assessments and natural resource governance. Hi, Derek. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. How are you doing?
Doing well. To get us started, could you tell us a little bit about your background and area of expertise?
Yes, I'm trained in public policy, and my research primarily looks at the role of communities in terms of how they interact with their natural environments. I do a lot of work on natural resource management, and particularly water. And what we're trying to look at with this project is how to make these communities more resilient into the future under variable climate conditions.
Can you tell us a little bit about what exactly you're working on for the Native Waters Project?
Yeah, for the Native Waters Project, we have two activities that we've done so far. So the first one has been to use a methodology called a climate vulnerability assessment to better understand where the gaps are in knowledge and information and even community characteristics in terms of how organizations such as a tribe, a sovereign tribal territory, might be more or less vulnerable to any of the impacts of climate change. And these are usually assessment tools that are used to kind of help a community itself get a better idea on how to prepare for the future. The second project that we've done so far is to look more deeply into what tribes are doing themselves. So we've conducted an analysis of some of the tribal climate adaptation plans to better understand some of the methods that they have found and how to proactively look ahead, how to look at the options they have about moving into a more uncertain climate future, and then to find ways to diffuse that to other tribal members. We've done that through a number of webinars with the Institute for Tribal Environmental Professionals and some other outreach activities as well. So what we're trying to do is take our research and make it applicable as much as possible to those folks making planning decisions into the future.
So tell us a little bit more about climate change vulnerability assessments. Like, what sort of information goes into one of these?
A climate vulnerability assessment is a suite of tools for comprehensively looking at the aspects of a community, everything from your demographics to your economic activities, in terms of how you might respond to climate change in the future. They can be used both to assess your gaps as well as proactively to look at ways that you might be able to use those that assessment as a tool to increase the resilience and capacity of a local community. So the main strength of a vulnerability assessment isn't necessarily just to highlight places that a community might have some gaps or weaknesses, but it's to get the discussion going on what our community should look like into the future.
So are you finding in your work that tribes are particularly vulnerable to climate change, like more so than other communities?
So that's a complicated question. And many of the traditional approaches to vulnerability assessment would look at tribal communities and say that they are more vulnerable for a number of reasons. Territorially, sovereign territory is restricted from what it's ever been in the past. So they have less geography to manage and to utilize. They don't always have good relationships with state governments in many states. And then there's a closer connection to the natural environment. And many of these local economies are very, very closely linked to the natural environment. So those factors would typically for most communities would highlight that there is some additional vulnerability for tribal communities. However, we also need to recognize that these communities have been around a long time. They have faced an enormous amount of change. They are fairly resilient inherently just by their persistence in these active cultural groups. So I think there is some hidden resilience that we need to understand a little bit better and that a lot of communities are able to bring to the front to actually look at either traditional, non-traditional, new ways of adapting to changing environments. So the way I prefer to put it is that tribal communities are inherently resilient, but it is really important that we highlight what those vulnerabilities might be and make them aware of those and then start that conversation on how to make these communities less vulnerable into the future.
In your research, what are some of the better adaptation plans that you've come across so far, and what in particular set these apart?
So one thing with doing assessment plans with the tribes is you very quickly learn how unique each one is. We have everything from urban colonies to sovereign tribal territories that are as large as some of our states. So it's hard to point out that there's one way to do it right and that any approach is necessarily better than any others. What we like to approach people with when we work with them on vulnerability assessments is that whatever plan, whatever approach that you put together is the one that's right for you. So it isn't so much that there's a set of best practices that works for everybody, but these really should be sort of problem-solving documents. So part of it is to start that discussion of, what do we collectively think as a tribal community that these are the places that we want to see improvement in order to respond better to future climate conditions. And then the information that they want to include in that typically is up to them. Now, some things that we have seen in both tribal and non-tribal plans that are sort of good approaches to look for is they really need to be multi-sectoral. So it helps to kind of look at the interactions across sectors. And what I mean by that is, not just look at the water management, but look how water management might be impacting forestry, might be impacting agricultural sector, might have implications for groundwater management, might even have implications for public health and human health in an area. So to sort of understand better as a multi-sectoral approach, typically multiple knowledge streams are better. So scientifically driven climate vulnerability assessments are important. It's critical to have the science right. But the way we interact with our natural world is through different types of knowledge systems. Some of these are traditional, some of these are our local knowledge, some of these are observational. So usually the best adaptation plans that we've seen and the best vulnerability assessments that we've seen tend to be those that look at the full range of how people understand the relationship with their natural environments. And then the last bit would be it's always plans are a exercise in documenting kind of a discussion in a community. So the only guidance I would give to sort of doing it well and doing it right is to try to look as much as possible into the future. So the ones that we typically see as some of the most interesting are those that have really documented specific actions to take when conditions reach a certain point. So, for example, there are some tribes that have looked at, really what is the point where they need to understand water scarcity and shortage as an economic emergency, and then what are the specific actions that they're going to take when that happens. So the more we can kind of show paths forward and real directions for action, that typically is better.
What are some of the benefits that you've seen for tribes in addressing their vulnerabilities sooner rather than later?
So one thing with climate change is that the cost of taking action is increasing as we wait and do nothing. And the longer we wait, the higher those costs get. And this is typically through more surprise events such as droughts and water shortages. Additionally, through more natural disasters that they face on tribal lands. And then it also means that you may have restricted choices as time goes on. So the sooner that tribes actually look at what their choices are moving into the future, the better. It also really we've started to see some really creative discussions on how to better understand tribal water rights, how to understand and move into the future of agricultural production that may be more niche production, and then a lot of very active discussions on thinking about how to train tribal youth can be those leaders of the future and the skill sets that they need to look at as natural resource management and community planners and leaders in their communities and what they need to be able to understand about variable climate and a changing environment. So a lot of them have been around education, actually.
So you have a webinar series that's going on now, and you have a new webinar coming out on January 29th. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we have partnered with the Institute for Tribal Environmental Professionals out of Northern Arizona. They provide information for tribal members who work in the environmental sector. And we have done two very successful webinars so far. The first two were on sort of a basic introduction to what is a climate vulnerability assessment. The second was more advanced tools, kind of understanding where to go for climate data. And we're doing a third one coming up that's going to be what to learn from tribal adaptation plans and how to assess the information that's out there. So these are all directed really at practitioners and professionals who are actively doing these now. And we're using the webinars as a way to deliver that information to them in a non-traditional format from what you've seen from a university and academic environment.
That's great. Well, we will post links to those on our website, and we'll post information about the upcoming webinar there as well if anyone's interested. Derek, that's all the questions we have for you today. So thanks so much for talking with us, and best of luck with your work.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed talking about the work, and I look forward to hearing more about other researchers on the project.
Funding for Native Waters on Arid Lands is provided by the United States Department of Agriculture, National Institute of Food and Agriculture. If you'd like to learn more about the Native Waters on Arid Lands project, please visit our website at nativewaters-aridlands.com, where you can find more episodes of this podcast and also supplemental information to go along with each episode. Thanks for listening.